Good morning. Thanks for coming this morning. Thanks for coming the first hour this morning and getting up a little early. We always appreciate that. As Zach said, we are in week three of our series that we're calling Mark's Maturity. And so far, we've had nothing but really positive feedback about the series and about the content. As Zach said, if you've missed any of these, you can always go online at centervillegrace.org/sermons, get caught up there. But we are, because we got good feedback, we're going to keep on going with this. So if I got bad feedback, I'd probably still keep going with this. But we're going to keep going anyways. And one of the reasons why we said this is really a series for all ages is this, that maturity, think about this, maturity is always available today, but isn't guaranteed to be there tomorrow. That doing the right thing and the mature thing today is always available for people to do today, but it's not always guaranteed to be there tomorrow. Because maturity has very, very little to do with age and has everything to do with character. And as we know, character qualities can come and character qualities can go. And that's why it's so disappointing, but not always surprising, that when someone who's older, who's more wise or more mature, slips up, fails in some way, and you know, it's like, how did that happen? Well, because maturity is not always guaranteed, is it, to be there tomorrow. So this really is a series for all ages, and hopefully, even if you don't have children, or even if you know your children are gone, and you know you don't have much influence in the next generation, you don't feel like this is really for all ages, and this hopefully is a reminder for you as well. Now, one of the challenges when it comes to parenting and when it comes to coaching and teaching and even as an employer with those coming up and the next generations behind us is to instill this principle that I think is probably one of the most important principles that we can instill into the next generation, and that's this, that now impacts later. That now impacts later. Whatever you do now will have an effect, an impact on your later. And so what you do now matters, right? And as parents and as coaches and teachers and all that, we want them to make decisions now based upon what they want later to look like. Like, what are your hopes and dreams? What are your plans? What are your goals? Well, you have to understand that in order to get there, you have to make decisions now based upon the future. That is one of the most important lessons that we can teach. In fact, I'm trying to teach my 8-year-old son, Sam, that. I don't know if you've ever worked with an 8-year-old before, but 8-year-olds, they're not a lot of, you know, foresight and long-term planning going on in an 8-year-old's mind, right? They're worrying about pizza and TV and videos and what's for dinner, mommy, and all that kind of thing. But it's so important to help them understand that you need to make decisions now based upon what you want your later to look like. And as adults, as people who have kind of gone down that path further enough, we know that later is longer. That's why this is so important. Later for them is longer. They have their whole lives in front of them. So later is important because later is longer. And so as we've been talking last week, if you weren't here last week, we talked about this idea that we live in a culture of convenience. And it's everything is just so readily available and so easy to have and all those things. And we said in a culture of convenience, adversity looks like an adversary. Adversity looks like the enemy. Adversity is something that you stay away from and you just don't even want to get near that because if it's hard, then it must not be for me. But we actually said adversity is necessary for maturity. That God uses and God develops us and our character and our qualities based upon the adverse situations and circumstances that we have gone through. And that certain things, certain character qualities, like we talked about humility and all those things last week, really cannot be developed without adversity in someone's life. It's necessary for maturity. It is not the adversary. This morning, we're going to talk about the adversary. The adversary to your future and to your children's future. And the adversary, I believe, is really can come down to this. The idea of instant gratification. Instant gratification. Instant gratification, as you know and I know, I mean, it's this. It's exchanging short-term pain for short-term pleasure at the cost of long-term rewards. That's what instant gratification is. And I'm telling you, instant gratification is the enemy. It is the problem that we all are tempted to walk down, the path to walk down, and it causes so many problems. And one of the problems with instant gratification is that it only lasts how long? and what? An instant, right? That's why we call it instant. Instant gratification can only last an instant. It is not, it's, you know, whatever the cost is, it's only going to produce just a little bit of pleasure, a little bit of gratification, just for a moment. But we do know that in that moment, it can cause sort of an addiction, right? We know the whole chemical thing going on with the dopamine, the whole drug chemical things going on in our brain, that instant gratification can be so addicting. And if not, if we're not careful, we can begin walking down the path of instant gratification. And instant gratification starts off by simply taking shortcuts whenever possible, right? It starts off with shortcuts. It starts off with quick fixes. It starts off with how can I get, you know, pleasure as quick as possible. And so we begin taking shortcuts, which then eventually, if we get, you know, addicted and if we keep down going down this path, we end up doing things and taking shortcuts that end up going against our integrity, going against what we believe is right and, you know, ethics and all that, and a loss of integrity happens. And eventually, disobedience occurs. And I'm not just talking about religious disobedience. We end up breaking our own rules. We end up breaking things that we said we would never do for instant gratification. And then eventually, it leads to, it ends up with personal or moral failure. That this is the path of instant gratification takes every single time. That these shortcuts lead to a loss of integrity, disobedience, and then personal moral failure. And we know Hollywood stars and politicians and, you know, famous people who all have taken this path. But let's be honest. I mean, all of us have traveled down on some level down this path before. All of us can look back on a time and go, man, you know, and maybe it was you, maybe someone did this to you, but it was like, you got to have it now, you got to say it now, you got to, you know, agree to it now, you got to buy it now kind of thing, and you just have to have it, you got to say it, you got to do it, and suddenly you realize, you look back and go, man, if I just had waited, if I just would have just practiced a little bit more self-control, if I just would have just said no in that moment, things would be so much different, because it was a short-term, you know, pleasure, but man, now I got to live with this for the rest of my life. Now, every time I got to tell my story, every time I got to talk about that season of life, I have to talk about that, and it's so embarrassing, and it's so, you know, regretful, and all those things. I wish I would have just practiced a little bit more restraint, and now I have to live with this long-term regret, this long-term consequence because of this short-term gratification that I wanted just for a moment, and sometimes, you know, those opportunities that we want later in life end up, the doors end up closing on us because of the path of instant gratification. And that's not what we want for our young people, right? I mean, we want our young people to have the doors of opportunities wide open as they get older, right? Because later is longer, and we want their laters to be better. We want their laters to be better. And so this is so important that we help instill in them this idea of later. Later is longer, and later is better. So let's take a different path. And so the temptation, and why this is so enticing, is because it really affirms, instant gratification affirms two, I think, fundamental, two important questions that we all ask ourselves on a daily basis when it comes to making decisions. And it's these: could I and would I? Could I and would I? Could I, meaning, is it possible? Could I, am I able to do this? Could I, is it legal? You know, could I do it? And then the idea of would I do it? Is it something that I want to do? Is it something desirable? And when we are met with instant gratification, the answer to both of these is an affirming yes. Yes. Yes, you can do it. Yes, you can do it, and you can have it right now. And who wouldn't want to feel good right now? Who wouldn't want to get out of this boredom, you know, thing right now? Who wouldn't want out of pain right now? Yes, yes, yes. Could I? Yes. Would I? Yes. And so in our culture, our young people are growing up with this idea that could plus would equals should, right? Could plus would equals should. It's, if it's available, if I want to do it, then why not? Why not? Why not? It's illegal. You know, it's legal. It's not illegal. It's legal. It's available. It's fun. Everyone else kind of doing it kind of thing. Could plus would equals should. And the real danger and problems that we are facing in our culture is this: that getting what we want now has never, never been so readily available as it is right now. Our young people are growing up in a culture and a time of not just fast, right? Because fast is a relative term. A telegram used to be considered fast, right? Fast is relative. Now we are living in an age of instant. Everything can be instantly obtained, just right there, instantaneously. It's not even a matter of needs anymore. Our kids, most of them have what they need. But now what they want is all at their fingertips. Videos, music, you name it, money, and all those kind of things. They can just click on it and it's there in a matter of a moment, a matter of a millisecond. And so they are growing up just not even understanding that some things, some very important things, take time. Like relationships, like intimacy, like financial security, kind of those things. Careers take time to build, time to develop. And our young people are coming out of high school and coming out of college expecting everything at their fingertips right then and there. They're expecting to make their first million by age 25. They're expecting when they walk into an employer, they're expecting benefits and vacation time and being treated like they've been there for 20 years. That's what they're expecting because everything they've grown up with has been at their fingertips, and now they're just kind of used to that, and now they have no sense of what it means to wait, no sense of what it means to delay that gratification, no sense of later is better because later is longer. It's like, I can have it now, so why not have it now? It has never been so available as of right now. But this isn't a new problem, right? We know this isn't a new problem. I mean, the opportunities might be more and more, but this isn't a new problem. This is like one of the oldest problems in history. This is one of those oldest dilemmas in history. In fact, if you ever read the Bible, let me encourage you to read the Bible, because the Bible is full of stories that include just this. In fact, if you grew up going to Sunday school, chances are you heard some of these Bible stories growing up. And what's so, I think, incredibly powerful about Scripture is that it doesn't hold punches. Even though it might, talk about the heroes of the faith and the stories and, all those things, it doesn't hold back. And it paints a very realistic picture of each person in the Scriptures. And it doesn't hold back their flaws, and it doesn't hold back these stories of when they chose to follow the path of instant gratification. And there's story after story after story of people falling down this path. In fact, let me just give you a couple examples. One is Abraham and Sarah. I don't know if you know the story of Abraham and Sarah. Abraham and Sarah were about 75 years old when God comes to Abraham and says, I'm going to make you into this great nation. And they didn't have any children yet. I'm going to make you into this great nation, and your descendants are going to be as numerous as the stars. Kind of Sarah laughs that off because they're so old. But that was the promise. And so they begin this idea, this waiting game, this waiting for God to kind of show up and do his thing. And God doesn't show up and do his thing. And so Sarah gets impatient. And Sarah says, hey, I have this maidservant, Hagar. You can go, Abraham, and go make a baby with her. And Abraham's kind of stuck in this kind of, what should I do now with that? Is that like a test? Should I do this? What do I do? And he falls for it. He gets impatient too. He says, fine, let's go do this. And so Hagar, he gets pregnant. And you just need to read Scripture, because the moment Sarah finds out that Hagar is present, pregnant, she gets mad. She gets mad at Abraham and says, this is your fault. You just need to read the Bible about that. This is your fault. This is a classic, kind of thing. It's like, wait a minute. This is your fault sort of thing. But both of them get impatient, and it ends up leading all kinds of problems. Another one is Jacob and Esau. Esau was the oldest of twins, which is kind of humorous, but he was the older one, and so he got the birthright, even though they were twins. And Esau comes back from a hunting trip one time, and he's so hungry, he's starving, he feels like he's starving to death. He sees Jacob making this, thing of stew, and so he sells his birthright for a cup of soup. Instant gratification. I don't know if it was for instant soup, but it was instant gratification right then and there. I gotta have it, I gotta have it, I gotta have it. Or Israel and Moses. Israel was, freed from slavery out of Egypt, led by Moses into the wilderness. And there God meets with Moses for 40 days up on Mount Sinai. And so Israel gets impatient. They can't wait any longer. They don't know if Moses is coming back, if he's coming back, when he's coming back. And so they get just so impatient. They just say, we're going to just make our own God and keep on doing this thing. And they make this golden calf. And that leads to all kinds of problems with them. And then you have King Saul. King Saul, when he was crowned king, Samuel, the prophet, said, here's what I want you to do. I want you to go to this town of Gilgal, and I want you to stay there 7 days, and I don't want you to do anything. I want you to wait for me. And on 7 days, when 7 days is done, I'm going to come back, and then we're going to do this thing. And so Saul waits these 7 days. But during those 7 days, the Philistine army, the enemies, begin to pressure Israel and pressure the armies. And so they're looking to Saul to do something. But Saul waits. And on the seventh day, right, the sun comes up, and it's like, well, there's no Samuel, and you know everything's about to go down, you know, with the army. We got to get God on our side. We got to make the sacrifice now. We can't wait for Samuel any longer. He gives into the pressure, and he makes the sacrifice. And then once that sacrifice is done, that's when Samuel shows up. I always picture Lord of the Rings. If you've ever seen Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, you know, Gandalf says, you know, the third day I'll come back when the sun's up, kind of thing. And Samuel shows up right after the sacrifice is over, on the seventh day. And he says, what are you doing? And Saul's like, well, I kind of, you know, waited. And he's like, you didn't wait long enough. I said 7 days, and 7 days isn't over. And because of your impatience, and this is made, because of your impatience, because of your disobedience, God is going to take the throne from you, eventually take the throne from you, Saul. And Saul will end up losing his throne to a young shepherd boy that most of us know as David. And that's who I want to land on this morning, his story. Because David, of all people, will get this whole instant gratification thing right. And you might say, well, isn't that the same David with David and Bathsheba? You know, and like, yes. Yes, later on in his life, he gets this wrong. And that's just to prove that maturity is not guaranteed to be there tomorrow. But in his early years, David gets this thing right. And I want to look at these examples this morning and hopefully draw some principles out. And so David and Saul kind of come to a head here. David is anointed by Samuel right after all this takes place. Samuel goes down to David's home and anoints this young David. He's probably 10 to 15 years old. Samuel anoints him as the next king of Israel, but then Samuel just leaves. And it's like, for David, it's like, what do I do now? What just happened? You know, what does this all mean? And then David eventually grows up, and he eventually grows up to be this incredible warrior for Israel. In fact, David is rushed into the spotlight of Israel when he defeats Goliath. And most of us know the story of David and Goliath. And David is put in national spotlight, and he gets on Saul's radar like he's never been before after this whole defeat of Goliath. And suddenly now David is seen as this great warrior, great champion, and he continues to grow, and he continues to have victory after victory after victory. In fact, here's what 1 Samuel says, and this is where we're going to be jumping in around 1 Samuel 18 and onward. So if you want to open your Bibles, you can, but it'll be on the screen. 1 Samuel 18 is this, that whatever Saul sent him to do, David did it so successfully that Saul gave him a high rank in the army. In other words, any time that David was sent out to defeat the Philistines or any other enemy, he got it done. He got the job done. And so this pleased all the people. So he earned respect from all the people and Saul's officers as well. So everybody likes David. Everybody thinks David is a great warrior guy. He gets the job done. We'll follow David in battle any day, anytime. And then it says this, when the men were returning home after David had killed the Philistine, the women came out from all the towns of Israel to meet King Saul. And as the king, this is something, this is great, right? Not only do you have like the men, but you have all the women coming out, and they sung and they danced and with joyful songs and with tambourines and lutes. And who would not enjoy this? But here's what they sang. And as they danced and they sang, here's what they sang. Saul has slain his thousands. And you think that's a pretty good song if you were Saul, but until you heard the second verse. And the second verse went like this. David, his tens of thousands. And so after hearing this, you know, from that time on, it says Saul kept a jealous eye on David. Eventually, that jealousy turned in such paranoia that Saul said, we gotta just put an end to David's life. And so he puts a call out for David's death. And David finds out about Saul's, you know, kind of warrant on his head from actually Saul's son, Jonathan. Jonathan tells David, here's what my dad is planning on doing. And so David gets out of Dodge. And David goes from Jerusalem, and he begins to hide out from cave to cave to cave. He actually spends some time in enemy territory as well, just hiding from Saul's army. for years and years and years. Because the first seven or so years, you know, he was in, you know, Saul's good graces. He actually becomes Saul's son-in-law. Everything was good, but now everything has turned upside down. And for the next 7, 8 years, now he's on the run. He is living in exile. But in this time, on the run, David learned some incredible lessons, and there are some incredible principles that come out of these stories, out of his life. And one of the most important principles, one of the most important lessons is this, that I'm accountable to God. That I'm accountable to God. And those who do right by God will be rewarded by God. And what does it mean to do right by God? It means God's will, God's way, in God's time. That's what it means. In fact, on two different occasions, this is what's so interesting with David's story. On two different occasions, David was tempted to follow the path of instant gratification. The opportunity was so right there for him to do this. But unlike Abraham and Sarah, and unlike Jacob and Esau, and unlike Israel and Moses, and unlike his predecessor, King Saul, David chose a different path, as we are going to see. There was two occasions. The first occasion is probably the most popular occasion, probably the more famous one, is when David and his men are hiding from Saul. And again, they're hiding from cave to cave to cave. And I'm now being in Israel, seeing that, there's lots of caves. I thought before, I was like, how many caves are there? There's lots and lots of caves in Israel. So this is like finding a needle in a haystack. And so David and his men are hiding out in a cave. And one day, Saul and his army are passing by. And so David and his men hide back, way back further, you know, in the cave so they aren't seen. And Saul and his army are walking by on Saul is probably on his donkey. And suddenly they stop. And Saul gets off of his donkey and walks into the very cave that David and his men are hiding in. And Saul stops because Saul has to relieve himself. This is maybe like the only time in the scriptures that someone talks about having to go to the bathroom, right? And this is why kids love the story. You know, this is why we tell this story in Sunday school. Saul's got to go to the bathroom. And so everybody stops. Saul gets off of his donkey, walks into the very cave that David and his men are just hanging out in, and they're watching all this, and it's like, there's Saul. And Saul is in the most vulnerable position a man could be in. His army is down there. He's up there. He's relieving himself. And here's what the men begin to say to David. I'm sure they're kind of whispering this to him. Here's what they're saying. This, David, this is the day. This is the day the Lord spoke of you when he said to you, I will give your enemy into your hands for you to deal with as you wish. It's like, David, are you kidding me? Of all the caves in all the world, you happen to be in the right one when Saul comes and is doing his business. I mean, come on, what are the odds, David? Here's your chance. This is the day that you were talking about. And apparently David had talked to these men and told them, you guys, you know, God's got something special planned for me. Just hang there with me. And, you know, God's going to reward us. Just hang there with me. Hang on. And they're like, this is the day. This is the day that God has given your enemy into your hands for you to deal with as you wish. Now, what's so amazing about this is that David almost listens to them. He almost listens to them. He almost gives in. In fact, I'm so surprised that he doesn't. But David takes a knife and he creeps up on Saul. And he has killed up to this, I mean, he has killed hundreds and even maybe thousands of Philistines. I mean, he's a warrior. I mean, he's got so much blood on his hands. This would be so easy for him to do. And so he creeps up on Saul. And yet, just before he's about to take Saul's life, instead, he takes a knife and he actually cuts the corner. Not cut the corner to the throne, because that's the whole, I mean, it's like, David, this is your quick chance, shortcut to the throne. He doesn't cut the corner to the throne. He actually just simply cuts the corner off of his robe. And he walks back to his men, and Saul, you know, gets done. Saul walks out of the cave, down to his donkey, and I don't know if they made eye contact back then after that or not, but he gets back on his donkey, and everyone, you know, begins to start marching again, and suddenly David stands out in the mouth of the cave. And David's holding this piece of robe, and he shouts out to Saul, and he shouts out to the army, and he gets everybody's attention, and here's what David says. He says, may the Lord judge between you and me, and may the Lord avenge the wrongs you have done to me. But my hand will not touch you. So everybody in this cave was telling me to go ahead and do it, to take the shortcut, to do the easy thing, to get out, because here is our chance, Saul. Here's my chance to get out of exile. Here's my chance to finally have a night's rest where I don't have to worry about who's going to be coming up behind me. I don't have to worry about who I can trust and who's out to get me and, you know, all these things. Here was my chance, Saul. Here is my shortcut. Here is my moment of instant gratification, and yet I have chosen not to do this. Not yet. This is not right for me to do. And Saul is so taken back by that that he lets David go, and David continues to run and hide. But yet Saul continues to chase David. And then there was this other occasion where Saul and his men are still marching, still looking for David, and they end up in Saul and his army in this desert called Ziph. And Ziph is kind of this wide open, kind of just nothing kind of territory with rolling hills. There's no trees or anything, lots of rocks. And in the desert of Ziph, David finds out about this because David has some spies watching Saul's army and knowing exactly where Saul is to always stay one step ahead of Saul. And so when David discovers that Saul and his army are in Ziph, David, you know, can't help himself. And so he grabs a group of guys and says, we're headed down to Ziph. And so they head down to there, they get on this hilltop, and they see Saul's army, which is about 3,000 people. And they see that they're setting up camp, and there's Saul right, as you know, expected, right in the middle of the camp, being surrounded by all of his guards and all the soldiers, and 3,000 men are there, and David's watching as the sun goes down, and then he turns to his friend, and he says, I got this really bad idea. Are you in? And the friend goes, okay, you know. And so his friend Abishai, and here's what he says. This is what happens next. So David and Abishai went to the army by night. This is amazing. And there was Saul lying asleep inside the camp with his spear stuck in the ground, because that's how they slept, right near his head. And there was Abner, who was the chief kind of guard there, and the soldiers were lying around him. So David and Abishai somehow sneak past all of the watchmen. They sneak past all the sleeping soldiers. They sneak past by the guards, and there they are standing next to Saul with a spear just inches away from Saul's head. And I'm sure at this point, Abishai is just whispering as softly as possible. But he says to David, today, God has delivered your enemy into your hands. David, I know we missed this other opportunity. I know we had it and we didn't take it, and you know, but here's another shot. Here's another opportunity. And David, I know you kind of have this whole deal about taking the Lord's anointed life, and I know that. And so here's the deal. God has delivered, you know, it's clear. God has delivered, you know, your enemies into your hands. But I know you don't want to do it. So here's what he says. Now let me pin him to the ground. With one thrust of my spear, I won't strike him twice. David, I know you got this hang up, and that's cool, and that's fine, everything. But hey, I'm here. Now, I can do this. I'll just take the spear, and I'll just do one strike. That's all it's going to take. It'll be a clean strike. It'll strike his heart. His eyes will open, and David, this is going to be great. The last person he sees will be you. I mean, talk about sweet justice. Talk about just instant gratification and pleasure. And all of this hiding is going to be over. All of this idea of exile is going to be over. And when the soldiers wake up, they're going to anoint you as king. And tonight, you know, David, the next night, you can be sleeping in the king's bed rather than some, you know, dark cave. David, let's just do this already. Let's just come on. Quick, easy, and we're done. But David said to Abishai, don't destroy him. Who can lay a hand on the Lord's anointed and be guiltless? Whether it's you, Abishai, or me, you know, we're not going to walk out of here, you know, free, scot-free. That we're accountable to God. That we're accountable to God. And we cannot take this man's life. It is just not the right thing to do. And then he says this, as surely as the Lord lives, the Lord himself will strike him. Either his time will come and he will die or he will go into battle and perish. I love his perspective. He's like 22, you know, early 20s kind of thing. And he says, let's just have a long-term perspective here. Eventually, Saul is going to die either of old age or, as most kings do, sometime in battle. But we are not going to do what only God should do and can do and has the right to do, and that's to take his life. And we are going to wait, as hard as that is, we are going to wait, and we're not going to do the easy way out. And then he says this, and I think this is the key to understanding this perspective. I mean, this is incredible. He says, but the Lord forbid that I should lay a hand on the Lord's anointed. But the Lord forbid that I should lay a hand. I know I could. I know it's right there. It is available. It is possible. I'm capable of doing this. I know I could. And there is part of me, I mean, come on, I really kind of want to. And if all things being equal, I would, Abishai. I would. But it's not about me. It's not about me. And David introduces this whole other question that I think our young people aren't really asking much anymore, or not in the way they need to. And that's the question of should I do this? In other words, is it the right thing for me to do? Is it really the right thing for me to do? And our people, again, they are struggling with the thought of could plus would equals should. But David says, no, that's not the way it works. I could do it, I would do it, but could plus would does not equal should. Because should comes from the whole answer to should I comes from a whole different place than coulds and woulds. Should comes from, is it God's will, that God's way, and God's time. Should is grounded in God's will, God's way, in God's time. And I shouldn't, I just can't. It's not the right thing for me to do. And I think, wow, what restraint, what self-control. I mean, it's one thing to have to wait when you don't have anything but to do to wait. When it's out of your hands, when it's out of your control, that's one thing. But when you have the opportunity right then and there to do the easy thing, to do what would be the pleasing thing, to do what would be to get you to where you think you want to be, come on. And yet David practices such restraint and such self-control because he understood should is grounded in God's will, God's way, and God's time. Now, the reason I bring up the could, would, and shoulds, because this is what's something I'm trying to work on with my son, Sam, who's 8, like I said. I will ask him constantly, Sam, what is the difference between could, would, and should? What's the difference, buddy? Because that is so important to know. Could, can I do it? Would, do I want to do it? But should is it the right thing for me to do? And where do we get the answer as, is it the right thing for me to do? And this is why I think being a Christ follower is so important and so helpful in this. Because if not, then where do you get your answer? If there is no God, you know, if the scriptures aren't true, then where do you get your answer for what is right? And I'm telling you, they will always fall back on, could I and would I? Could I and would I? And as adults, we know just because you can, just because you would, doesn't mean you should. Should has to come from a whole separate source. And I'm trying to get my young Sam and Ethan, those guys, to understand there is a huge difference. And the best question is, should I, and should I comes from God's will, God's way, in God's time. And then at the end of the story, right? So they're still next to Saul, and, you know, they still have this opportunity to kill him, but David says no, and Abishai's like, well, why in the world did we ever come in the first place? I've risked my life for this. And so they sneak back out, but they take Saul's spear, and they take his water jug. And so then they kind of sneak out of the camp and they go back on top of the hill. And as the sun's coming up, you know, David stands out and he begins to yell. And he yells out this guy's name, Abner, 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 Abner. And he begins to taunt Abner, who's this chief bodyguard, saying, you've done such a lousy job guarding your king, right? And he kind of taunts Abner, he kind of taunts Saul. And here's what he says. He says, here's the king's spear. So he holds up the spear and all the army and all, you know, Saul and all those guys suddenly realize that David was right next to Saul and David had every opportunity to take Saul's life. And he says, here's the king's spear. let one of your young men come over and get it. Like, na 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 boo boo, you know, I got this and you don't kind of thing. He says, look what I could have done and I did not do it. But then he says something, again, this is so, I think, so important for us. He says, the Lord, and this is his perspective, this is what restrained his hand. The Lord rewards every man for his righteousness and faithfulness. The Lord delivered you into my hands today, but I would not lay a hand on the Lord's anointed. Saul, come on, I could and I would, but I know I should not. I should not. I should not. And I know what I do now impacts later, and I know later is longer, and I don't want my story to be written where I did things my way instead of God's way, because I know, those who do right by God will be rewarded by God. And I'm willing to sacrifice my now for what God has for me later. I'm willing to do that. Because I can trust that his rewards are better than anything that I can get right now. And isn't that a sign of maturity? I mean, that is like, to me, that's one of the biggest signs of maturity. Willing to delay that kind of gratification for something better. And that's our third mark in our series. A mature person is willing to sacrifice short-term pleasure for long-term rewards. They're just willing to do that. And somewhere along the line, and I don't know how this happened, I don't know who taught him, I don't know, but somewhere along the line, somebody instilled into David this idea that now impacts later, now impacts later, later is longer, so later is more important, and you are accountable to God. It's not about you. And those who do right by God, I'm telling you, will be rewarded by God. And what does it mean to do right? It means to do things God's will, God's way, in God's time. And as a result, David was able to practice incredible patience and self-control and to do what probably most of us, and not do what most of us would have done in that situation. What Abraham and Sarah failed to do, what Esau failed to do, what Israelites failed to do, David got this right because of this. Now, I don't know where you guys are at in life right now. I don't know what you're struggling with. But I know this temptation is on all of us. It's a constant battle. It's a constant battle to cut corners, to kind of do things that are maybe kind of in the gray area, that kind of go against our integrity, go against, you know, just to get what we want now. It is so much more easier today than ever before. Whether you're young or old, this is a battle. This is a battle. And so let's just David's story just be a great reminder for us, a great encouragement for us. That later isn't just longer, but later's better. I mean, later's better, isn't it? And we want our laters to be better. And the only way to do that is to make the right decisions now. To do what you know that you ought to do now. To do what God has called us to do now. Whether that's the hard thing, the painful thing, the boring thing, whatever, how you kind of categorize it, to do it now, to set yourself up for a better later. And as parents, this is something that, again, this is a fight that we're going to constantly have to do with our children, an issue that is getting harder to teach and harder to develop in them. So let me just ask you two quick questions, and then we'll wrap things up. But here's the first question. As parents or coaches or leaders, you know, you fill in the blank on this one, but how might you be contributing to your child's need for instant gratification? This is you just need to take an honest look at your parenting, honest look at how you are developing the next generation. How are you contributing to this? How often are you saying yes to things when they have a request? How much time are you having them wait? How much work are you having them do to get what they want? Because ultimately, it's on us as parents to develop this and help them out with this. And how much are you contributing to this problem? And I say need in this because that's how a child feels, right? I need this, I need this, I need this. Because they're addicted to it. How much are we contributing? How much screen time are we allowing? How much, you know, the things that are just so, you know, social media. I didn't even touch on social media on this. Social media. How much time are we allowing them on social media? It's actually delaying their development of patience. That's what they're discovering more and more and more. How much are we contributing to this? And then the other kind of flip of this question is how much or how might you be combating your child's need for instant gratification? And I use the word combating because when we say no, it's a fight. It's a war, isn't it? It's a constant war because they'll pull out all stops. All is fair and love and war, you know, war kind of thing. And this is, they'll cry, they'll give you the look and everything else. But come on, what are you doing combating this idea, this need for instant gratification? What's your plan? You have a plan? How intentional are you with this? Because they need these skills. This is like one of the most important skills to set them up for the future. But more importantly, when it comes to faith, in order to wait for God, in order to do things God's will, God's way, and God's time, they need to learn, I have to wait, and it's not about me, it's about what God wants. It's not about what I want, and I'm accountable to God. And I'm willing to do the right thing now for something better later that God has for me. I don't want to rob myself of that opportunity. So what are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing to contribute, and what are you doing to combat this need for instant gratification? Talk it over with your spouses. If you have some good stuff, share it on Facebook this week. Let's work together on this. This is such an important issue. Would you pray with me? God, thank you so much for David's story. Thank you that he got this right. And God, you did reward him. I mean, you rewarded him with 40 years on the throne. You rewarded him with basically an eternal dynasty that Jesus came through the line of David. So God, I pray for our young folks right now, this next generation who has everything at their fingertips, it seems like, that you would help develop in them this idea of self-control, of resilience, of just hanging in there when things are get tough, to be patient, to wait for you. And God, we know that when we wait for you, you show up. And I pray, Lord, that even as we are older, this temptation never goes away. And it's so tempting to cut corners, to take the easy way out. So God, I pray that you give us strength. And whatever temptation is there right now, God, help them through it as you promised to provide a way out, to stand up under it. God, help us to have a long-term perspective on life. Help us to do well in our parenting and teaching and modeling this in front of our kids. We thank you for Jesus. We thank you that he was our ultimate example. And we pray this in his precious name. Amen.